janefinch.com.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon, or I should say good evening. My name's Sean Arena. I'm an inspector from 31 Division, looking after the operations section there. So welcome, and thank you in acknowledging the consultative committee, our local representatives from the MP's office in the city, and most importantly, the members of the community who stepped forward here today. My job here is to just introduce the rest of who's on our panel right now. As you've already met Staff Superintendent Jim Raymer of our Detective Services. I've got Deputy Chief Mark Saunder of our Specialized Operations Command Pillar, Superintendent Dave McLeod, the Unit Commander of 31 Division, and Staff Sergeant Rick Blanchard from 31 Community Response Unit. So these are the members that will be on the panel. Now, just to lay down some of the framework for this, we have a two-hour limit. It's scheduled from 6:30 to 8:30. We're a little behind right now. Everybody has an opportunity to speak once the questions are put out. We encourage the community interaction. Everybody's opinion is important. So if you're up here, just remember there's other people in the room that may want to ask a question. So just give a little bit of time for everybody to get the questions, and hopefully we can answer them. We've got it formatted right now that I've got three questions that we are going to address. I want you to think about them right now, and I'll get back to them. What do you envision in this community 5 years from now is one of the questions. The second question is, what can you do and are currently doing to achieve this vision? And the third question would be, what resources, support do we need to create a safe, sustainable, and vibrant communities? Now, if in the two-hour time period or one-and-a-half-hour time period we have left, if these questions are addressed and there's other questions you wish to bring forward, feel more than welcome to step up. What I am going to ask you, if you do have a question, is step up either to this mic, or if you don't feel comfortable coming up to the mic, wave at me and I'll come over there and I'll give you the mic I've got in my hand. So at this point, I'm going to introduce Deputy Chief Mark Saunders to say a few words.
Just a couple of things. First and foremost, I want to congratulate the Consultative Committee for doing this. Thank you very much. This is a very important step in how we can hopefully get this right. Consultative committee are people that are volunteers. They do this on their own time. They put in a ton of energy, a ton of research, and they have a lot of input. And so coming down to grassroots and coming to the communities and bringing it here, it becomes a piece to let you realize that there is a voice. And hopefully you'll be able to contact some of these folks so that they can contact you, so that you can be heard if you have any issues. There are many different ways in which you can be heard, but I think that this is a very big one, and this is a very important one, because as a police service, it's important for us to listen to community. And our chief did a great job when he developed these committees, because we have learned more about ourselves on things that we're doing right, and more importantly, things that we can do better. And it is by having these types of meetings that I think puts us on the right road for moving in that right direction. So thank you to the committee for doing it. And I want to thank the people that are here. The fact that you're here tells us that you care about the community. The fact that you're here tells us that you want to speak to us. You want to know what's going on. You want to be engaged. You want to be plugged in. And more importantly, you want us to hear how you feel about the relationship that we have with you, about how we can make this community better together. And so it's important that you feel free to state your opinion, to have your concerns told to us so that we can get better at what we're doing.
Thank you, Deputy. Okay, I'm going to put the first question out there, and if the room stays quiet, I'm going to encourage you, and I'm actually going to come around and give you the mic, because the whole idea is to have an open discussion. So the first question that I had mentioned earlier is, what do you envision in this community 5 years from now? Anybody want to step up, or I can come out to you with the mic? Anybody? Oh, there's got to be somebody that's envisioning something for the community 5 years from now.
I'm a resident of this area, and I've lived here a long, long time. And I'd like to see no more crime, you know, like a nice, peaceful neighborhood.
Panel to answer that. She's looking to see how do we get to a lower crime rate or to a level where we don't have crime, and how we can address that.
Thank you. My name is David McLeod, as was mentioned earlier, and I'm the most accountable person at 31 Division. The subject of lower crime and the pursuit of lower crime is obviously all-encompassing for all of us. It's encouraging to tell you that last year our crime rate fell in 31 Division, our seven major crime indicators, and those seven major crimes, we refer to them as major crime indicators, and sometimes we forget that the public do not specifically know what they are. So I'll tell you what they are. Murder, sexual assault, assault, robbery, break and enter, auto theft, and theft over $5,000. Last year, our major crime fell by 20% in this division. That's 20% of people who did not have break-ins. To put it in perspective, in 2011, there were 8 murders in this division. Last year, there were 3. So we are heading in the right direction. Would we like to see it a place where there's absolutely no crime, where, in fact, we're out of work? Yeah. Chances are that that's not going to happen, but we are moving in an encouraging direction. Year to date, at this point, this year, we are at 27% on top of the previous 20% in lowered crime rate. Now, how do we get to that? That's a big issue. It is well known and well understood and accepted that the police by itself is not capable of making the sort of difference that we saw in this division last year and that we're seeing this year. So it is the community, it is activity like this, it is partnerships like this that actually does cause that reduction. So will we see less crime? Yes, we will, if we continue to work like this.
I help us.
I'm not sure that you are equipped to answer this, but has any needs analysis been done, in particular with young people that lives within the area of Chain and Finch, to find out what their needs are? Because I'd like to see more educational facilities, not just the recreational basketball that is common, but to do more. But we are the older folks, and we will be out of here, and the younger ones are coming up. So you're not going to find them here in this meeting. So I'm just wondering if any efforts have been made to engage them in this process.
I wish I could answer the entire question in a way that you would like. We've recognized the need that the voice of our youth needs to be heard more than it presently has been. And you're right. A lot of times the solution seems to be to give a kid a basketball and away you go and now all our problems are solved. But there's a much bigger picture to that answer, which is what you're looking for. I can tell you that one of the things that we have commenced doing, and it's a couple of years new right now, is some of the divisions have youth councils that get to speak with the police on a regular basis. And they work in partnership with us to help us understand exactly what the needs are, what the concerns are, what the issues are. And it's the ability of having that opportunity to have that dialogue, which is something that we'd have these town hall meetings and we would see that over and over and over again, it would be the same people coming all of the time. You know, we need the guns taken off the street. We need to arrest all the bad guys. And the message was being preached to the choir. The people in the room knew that. And the people in the room were the people that would be calling the police. And a lot of the mechanisms that we had that were showing us where the crime is coming from, particularly the youth, some of the youth, they were never at these venues. So we've now reached out to them, and we've got many programs that are specifically related to the youth so that we can start that relationship building. And that's a starting block with our service in incorporating better solutions rather than just that one-stop solution that we have right now. And many divisions have different programs. We've got cooking programs, life skill programs, all kinds of programs that not only allow a relationship build, but also allow life skills, because some of these kids don't have the proper examples, don't have the proper mentorship, or don't have the proper good quality examples in front of them on a regular basis. So by doing this, we're getting stronger at doing that.
Okay, I just wanted to add something here. If you could just say who you are or where you're from. Also, if there's any other expertise in the audience, when the questions are posed, if you want to answer those questions along with our panel, just put your hand up, and if you can answer those questions that are put by the audience, then feel free to put your hands up if you've got the experience or the expertise in those questions. Now, I believe...
Lana Salmon, I'm just visiting, and I'm a member of the JCA. You said that the crime rate has reduced substantially. What do you think, as a police force, was most effective in reducing that crime rate?
The criminologists are still busy trying to figure out why crime is reduced across North America. And, of course, there are a number of reductions and a number of reasons for it. I can tell you what my personal views are on what we've done. This is my second command. I was at another division and used some of the same strategies. The key issue for me has always been to get the community to work with us. In other words, if you see something, say something. That has been the number one thing for us. I can't tell you the number of times that my officers will go to the scene of a break and enter, and in canvassing will find someone, a neighbor, who says, you know, I saw someone on the driveway, I saw someone walking up to the door, I didn't think much of it at the time. And we will say, if you had thought something of it at the time and called us, we would have responded. So reduction of crime is a combination of analyzing where crime occurs and making sure that you put your resources there. That's number one. Making sure that the people that you're working for, and I stress working for, understand that we cannot do it by ourselves, but that we need the help of the community. And getting that help of the community means gaining the trust of the community and maintaining that trust. Once we have that, the other technical things that we do to reduce crime, such as monitoring the offenders, ensuring that they're abiding by their conditions imposed by the court, rearresting and holding them accountable, those are the technical things. But I also want to stress that that although I spoke about the numbers, and they're important, to us because we use them as a measure for a variety of things, but the most important measure is always the what we get back from the community. The community says that we feel safer, we feel there's a difference, we feel there's something happening, and it's changing. That's what's important to us. We can't quantify that, but it has a quality to it that is much more important than the numbers.
Okay, are there more questions? Or, you know what, for those of you who have just come in, I can just ask that first question again, if you wish to ask something of it. The first question that we did put out there was, what do you envision in this community 5 years from now? A number of questions have been asked. Okay.
No, sorry. I was just going to respond back earlier with regards to the reaching out to the youth. We did specifically send out to the high schools and the elementary panel and to the organizations that work with the youth to try to ensure that we could have gotten some representation today, so we did reach out.
Are there any more questions? Or
with a question?
Where do you envision a community in the next 5 years?
Okay. Okay. I think from a person that's not a police, looking at a policing perspective, I kind of want to see a little bit more consistency with different police boards and different police forces in Ontario in terms of, you know, when you're reaching out to communities, when you're saying we want to gain the trust, this is what we want to do. Like, there's, I know that you share intel and share information and share a whole lot of things like that, but sharing ways that you can, you know, reach out to youth and allow them to trust you, because I know that trust is a big issue, and I'm not really sure how you would even get, in terms of, like, you know, profiling and things like that, getting past certain ways that generationally communities have mistrusted the police. So police working together and, you know, thinking about what they've done right, what they've done wrong, accountability, and not necessarily, you know, I'm not blaming per se, but it could be more of like an information sharing, I feel like. And I don't really know what goes on in terms of that at this point. So maybe that's my question. Yeah, like even if you're talking about like TPS, York Region, and I guess Durham, for example.
We have, you're exactly right. The sharing of intelligence is a critical part of crime prevention and solving crimes. And because criminals are mobile, and particularly in the information technology age that we're in, it's their mobility isn't necessarily in a motor vehicle or visible. We have a standing committee with York Regional Police. All of the police service, police divisions that are bordering on Steeles Avenue, so that would be 23 Division, ourselves, 32, 33, and 42 Division. These are the Toronto Police Service divisions that border on York Region. So there's a standing committee that of unit commanders that meet on an ongoing basis. That's at the administrative level. Our crime analysts and our field intelligence officers as well are very actively involved with each other with sharing of information. And this is one of the reasons why it's not uncommon when we arrest someone, for example, who is a prolific in break and enters, that we will notify York, we will notify Peel, and they will also have charges laid in the same circumstances. And this goes for sexual predators, fraudsters, any type of criminality, just because of its mobility. So your question is a very, very good question. Yeah. I would defer that question to the deputy, because the OACP, the Ontario Association of Chiefs of Police, has in place a number of measures that are used for that purpose.
So I must have been mistaken, because I thought that the question dealt with sharing of intelligence from multi-jurisdictions, and now it's kind of morphed into the community relationships. But I...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, if what she said when, like, I don't even, having trust, having the community trust you, issues of police mistrust, things like that, are you using the same measures that you would use for criminality for communities, to help communities? Like, is it just about, crime, basically.
You mean sharing best practices, then?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Well, we... Okay. The microphone's right there. Thank you.
What she's aiming at is, do you just look for criminals? Or do you use every tactics for criminals? Or are you just trying somehow to help people who might... just make a misstep?
No. First and foremost, I mean, our primary function within a community is public safety, is to making sure that, you know, folks are getting to and from their places safely. I mean, in different areas of the city, there are different values. I can go to a different pocket of the city and their primary concern is my car is getting broken into. And I can go to another part of the city and the big issue is my son or daughter okay to walk to school and back? So two completely different dynamic issues. And so as a police service, the way that we try to be successful in addressing the needs is by identifying what is the strongest value for that community. And the way that we learn that is by having those conversations with the members of the community, with the consultative committees, because they speak to us and let us know what's going on, and they let us know where the relationships are weak, where they are strong, and what we can do better. And that's a practice that we've had for a long, long time. We've got community response officers. That's all they do is identify the softer issues, attending functions, participating in community activities, whether it's on radio stations or whether it's at festivals or carnivals, things like that, having a softer approach to allow stronger engagement pieces with the community. And then, of course, the folks that you see in the regular cars, they do the primary response, so those calls for service, the 911 calls, and those issues where you need that immediate police response and report taken. So we invest a tremendous amount of resources in developing community relationships. Our divisional policing, what's the SU stand for? Support units, that's all they do, is they don't go out making the arrests. They go out looking for agencies that can help make communities stronger. And then we build those relationships, and then we go in with those agencies and try to participate in developing that relationship and making a stronger community.
Okay, so
okay,
what
this is your third attempt, okay?
This is it, I know. Okay. And I should probably leave after this. What you were just talking about, officers that do that, initiatives like that, is it typical for somebody to maybe call York Region and say, this worked with the community, we do this, that's kind of what I'm talking about, things that work? Are you sharing that?
Yeah. We have strong relationships nationally and internationally, and we have a lot of places all around the world that we go to when we see things are successful. When there's this incredible increase of something that is good, we go and we like to see why it worked and how it worked, and then we bring it back and see if we can make it more Toronto-centric. And the other part, a lot of people from different agencies from all over the world come to Toronto and they ask us, how do we do what we do? And we share information back and forth. I'm involved in many committees from a multitude of different police agencies and sub-agencies from all over the world where we sit down and we have the round table. What's working here? Why is it working? And how did you start it up? So it's a lot easier to duplicate something that's successful than it is to try to create it on your own right from grassroots.
Okay, sorry. You want to add to it? Okay.
In addition to what the deputy just said, the consultative process, I'll kind of swing this around. The consultative process also works. That's what we do. So members of the community have the opportunity to talk to us about their issues. One I can give you, just off the top of my head, I'm driving down the street and five police cars pull over someone. Our responsibility as a committee is to take it to the police and say, why is this happening? And so we ask the tough questions, and it's a two-way street. They can say, here's the issue we have in your community. Can you help us? How can you help us? But we also have a responsibility to our community to ask, why is this happening? And we expect an answer. So other services have reached out to us in the past. Windsor, for example, Kitchener and London have reached out to our community and our committee specifically and asked for guidance on how we did what we did and why is it so successful.
Okay, thank you. This gentleman here, this after you, ma'am, after this gentleman, and then I believe you had a question as well, sir? Okay.
Yeah, my name is Maislin. Yes, I'm a resident. I live just around the corner. Like, I'm in the community for a long time, and I never had a problem with the police. But the young ones around here, like, I know a lot of these guys and girls, and they have such hatred for the police, which is not good. So what I'm thinking is, like, if the police could have some kind of communication with these young people, because their problem is they'll be walking down the street and the cops will just pull them down. Some of them get beat up, all kind of things happening to them, and they turn it around. If they weren't black, this would not happen to them. These are the black children, and there's a lot of them. I've even witnessed it myself. So what I'm saying is that couldn't the police have some kind of engagement where they make friends with these young people, like have some kind of community thing, let these young people gain your trust that you won't harass them, you won't hurt them, and, you know, because they're basically looking at them because this one may be wearing their pants a certain way, they're on drugs, or they're selling drugs, or they have some kind of drugs on them, whatever the case may be. And this is what a lot of them carry such hatred, and even though I talk to them and I tell them, have respect to the police when they're speaking to you, and they probably won't harass you or whatever, but they have such hatred, which is not good. I mean, a community like this, even though we're here as parents, all of us here, we're not the ones who have the problem. It's those young people out there, like, they're the ones who should be here right now. A meeting like this, these young people should be here, because the parents don't have the problem, and they're the one who need the issues addressed. So is there a way where you could make some kind of communication, like gain their trust somehow, that they could come sit and meet with you and talk with you and solve whatever the issues are?
I'm going to ask Staff Sergeant Blanchard, who is my community response unit manager, to speak on that. And I'm sure the deputy has comments on it as well. And I will have a few comments myself.
I agree with you 100%. We've been working on trying to gain the respect and communication with the youth. I've run a couple of youth forums. One was at a Osgood Law School. They had a youth forum. We had a youth forum just down here at Driftwood, and it's the same concern from the youth, and there was about 20 to 25 youth at each one. And as a result, it's that first 15 seconds of interaction with the youth on the street. And it's basically, how are you? What are you doing? So we've taken this back to our station with our officers, and what we've done is myself, the inspector, and the superintendent have actually gone on parade, which happens, and we've addressed every platoon. And we're working on trying to get people that first 15 seconds, and it's something that's going to take time to work on, but at any time that if a group can get together, or anybody wants to get a group together, I can get my officers or myself. And one of the issues has been coming in uniform. And I will take the time to have my officers not in uniform to give that ease right away until we can work into that relationship. And if there's anything my office can do, we'll gladly do it. A lot of it is training.
I'll throw a couple of things out as well, too. I think one of the important factors that we have to really embrace is that when we talk about the youth, I can tell you 98% of those youth are good kids. 98% of them are good kids. And the misnomer, the mistake that keeps getting made is that all of the youth get painted with one brush. Many of the police stations have tons of programs involving our youth. And I don't know if we market it properly enough. I'm not sure what the thing is, but the people that are plugged into what the police are doing with the community, they know exactly all of the programs and workshops and things that we do that are incredibly successful, and we get great results and we get great relationships with our youth. When we had our YPI program, Youth and Policing Initiative, years ago, our command sat in front of, I forgot how many youth workers, and said, this is what we want to do. We want to bring these young people in from neighborhoods that are high risk, and we want them to work with us over the summer. Almost every single one of them said, that's not going to work. It's terrible. It's a bad idea. But the command pushed through. And when they pushed through, they were able to hire the 150 people. And every year they get over 1,000 people applying for this thing. It's a very successful program. And as you had indicated, people from the world have come to see, how is this program working? What did you do to incept this thing to get going? And it's a fantastic thing that we do, and we've now extended it where we have a fall program. And when we attend the graduation of all of these youth, it turns out to be 100 and over 200 when all said and done, they all get their certificate. They got big smiles. They know the officers by names. They have a stronger understanding of what we do, and we have a stronger understanding of what their concerns or issues are.
And it works out to be a fantastic relationship, and it's something that we're continuing to do. But on a day-to-day basis, I can tell you that every single division has a vast amount of programs where they have youth involved, and they're all very successful programs. But we need to figure out, as a service, how to get the message out to everybody. Because when I go to some of these meetings, a lot of parents aren't even aware of the programs that are available within their division. And that's something that we need to key into, to figure out how we can get that message to everybody. There's certain people that know how to go and where to go to get that information, and they participate. But there's also a large number of people that don't know how to get that information. And so we need to figure out how to get that done.
We've done several things like that, and that's the sort of advice that we've taken. And you're obviously right on the right track, because sometimes it's the issue of the uniform that creates the barrier. I've been here since September of 2011, and I've met with a number of youth community organizations, and without fail, the number one issue for youngsters is the approach, the way police officers approach them. When the staff sergeant says that we talk about and we hold our members accountable and ensure that they are being respectful while performing their duties, that is not something I take lightly. As a result of this sort of advice, we brought two youngsters into the station over the course of the winter to deliver training to our officers. They attended every Thursday for 5 weeks. This is our training day. And spoke to and delivered training that would make you proud of these youngsters. And our officers had the appropriate questions. And those that had any illusions about who is going to be in charge of this world as we go forward, and where those youngsters are heading, were enlightened. It is not an easy process. It is not going to turn around in a moment. It needs our command. It needs people like myself. It needs our crime analysts and all of our people in our division to ensure that, first of all, we are respectful, and secondly, that we hold our people accountable. If we do not, from the top down, then we will continue the cycle that you've described. I'm happy to say we're not there yet. We're far from being there, but we're getting there.
I want to extend greetings to everyone for being here. My name is Renrick Harry.
Thank you.
I've been in the community for over 26 years. Getting back to the original question, which is what you envision the community for in the next 5 years, what I'm really concerned about is the stigma attached to the community, which is Gene and Finch. Once you are from Gene and Finch, you know, there is a stigma attached to it. So that is what I want to be eradicated, or get away from. You know, if you go anywhere and you tell people that you are from Gene and Finch, there is some sort of, you know, negative you know, aspects of being from the community. So that's what I want to know. If you have any solutions to bring in, I know all the issues discussed here will bring us to that level, but what I'm interested in getting that negative concept of being from Gene and Finch, or how people are treated in Gene and Finch, or if people from Gene and Finch move somewhere else, or, I mean, how people look at them. So that's my concern of how do we address that and bring Gene and Finch as a upstanding community.
As a community, we've made enough effort to bring those people forward and to prove that they grew up here. And they turned out to be very successful businessmen, different professions. They've done really well, but I'm not sure we're tapping into that resource, and that's something you should consider.
One of the stalwarts of this community and we've unashamedly used his name and his persona in driving that very message home, is Dwight Drummond from CBC. Someone who contributes so much more back to the community. But to the point of the stigma, one of the very first things I did in coming here was to Google Jane Finch, and there are all kinds of websites and so on. I've been 34 years of the police service, and I knew the area, and I've got friends here, whether I was here or not. But the words that jumped out at me in looking at it was welfare, crime, drugs, violence. Nowhere did I see that there's a university here mentioned, one of the largest universities. Nowhere did I see that there are so many community organizations dedicated to civic responsibility and dedicated to the betterment of the community. Nowhere. And someone said, and I believe that was you that said, we're not marketing that. You're absolutely right. We're not marketing that. I'm not going to steal your thunder, Mr. James, because I know what you're going to say. So I'll leave that comment for you. One of the things that we're doing is we are having these kinds of sessions and on a local level. I really believe that the complexion of the community, the temperature of the community is changing. I put tweets out all the time asking, and the responses that I get is yes. People tell me, they respond to my tweets, they respond on Facebook, they come into the station, and when we're walking about, they say that there is something changing here. I'm not suggesting that we're responsible for it. We may have a part to play in it, but it is the community that is being empowered, and it's the community that's doing that. And when people talk about unemployment here, I remind them that if you drive south or on Jane Street at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the mornings and look at the bus stops, the people that are standing there are not just standing there. They are going to work, and they are coming from work at 7, 8 o'clock at night. So this is not a community of unemployed welfare recipients. These are the things that we're pushing forward. Mr. James had a comment. Well, no. You had your hand up.
Okay.
I think he's going to testify.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I think there are some children here as well. My name is Henry Gomez. I am an Easterner. I come from Scarborough. And you may wonder, well, wait a minute, what's he doing here? You know, in this setting, education has been my life. I recently retired as a secondary school teacher. Joan Young, who is part of this committee, has been a colleague of mine for a number of years now, and it's really through her that I'm here. Looking at the first question, how do we see this community 5 years from now? I kept thinking, since I come from an arts and education perspective, I kept thinking of possibilities. Now, I hope you entertain my thoughts, even though I'm not from Jane and Finch. I hope you don't hold that against me. But since I began coming up to this area through the Caribana organization, I began feeling a kind of energy in this community. There is something about Jane and Finch that I can't quite put my finger on it, but there is something about this community that amazes me. So, in the creative process, several things came to my mind, and bear with me a little, okay? Number one, Jane and Finch is not just an intersection. That is number one, and that started shaping my thinking. As I drove through the community, I became more convinced that the people here need the same things that everybody needs, the best for your children. We want to live in safety and so on. The people here are normal people like anywhere else. And I kept thinking, what can be done from an arts perspective, since that is part of my discipline, what can be done from an arts perspective so that in 5 years we see Jane and Finch in a more positive light? One of my colleagues here, Winston LaRose, has been working in this community for any number of years. He too is involved in Caribana. All of you may know that there's been a children's festival here for a number of years now, the Caribana Children's Carnival. Last year that was moved to Downsview Park, but we insisted that we would keep a presence here at Jane and Finch because we believe that great things come from Jane and Finch. And I think that's what Superintendent McLeod was referring to just now. And I'm going to challenge all of you sitting right here now. I want all of you to say, great things come from Jane and Finch. You see, you don't believe that. Good. So great things come from Jane and Finch. Say that. Let me hear you. Okay, some of you are starting to believe it. The reason we came up with that slogan, I don't know how, I don't know why, but it just occurred. Look, the kids in this area need to believe that, they need to think that, they need to say it. So this year we began going into schools, some public schools, some middle schools, and making presentations to encourage the children to become involved in the Caribana, the children's parade. Why are we doing that? We know that through the arts, children develop a much more positive impression of themselves. And once they begin feeling better about themselves, they begin behaving differently. We see the results over and over again. So in 5 years, in 2 years, you have the Pan Am Games happening here. I believe this area will play a big role in the Pan Am Games. So I think along the road to 5 years, in 2 years' time, you could have this community heavily involved in the Pan Am Games, which is something very positive. Now, I too have had my, I wouldn't say run-ins, but I've been profiled, I know that, and I'm not saying it doesn't exist, I'm not lightening the situation for you. Okay, fairly recently that happened. But I believe if we begin to see what we want as opposed to what we don't want, if we begin to live our own self-fulfilling prophecy, then we are better off moving in that direction. I don't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. But I believe that the carnival arts through Caribana, which will be happening here again, can play even a small role in getting our children to feel much more positive about themselves and believing that great things come from Jane and Finch. I hope that helps in some way.
Thank you. Just on the first question, I'm going to take actually the two more questions, and if you're quick, and then we'll move on to the second question. We've only got just over an hour left, so I just want to make sure we address the other questions, and then if we have time, we'll move back to the questions that you have for either one.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. My name is Everton Gordon. I'm the new interim CEO at JCA. Some of you might know very well about JCA and interim. JCA is undergoing currently organizational change, and it's involved in different dialogue with the community to look at possibly evolving into a different structure, or we might maintain the same structure. But anyway, it's interesting, the question as to what we envision for Jane and Finch for the next 5 years, obviously, I would like to see JCA at the center or the hub of initiative that are creative and dynamic that will drive the community. I started when I come to Canada in Jane and Finch. And the interesting thing is that some of the things are, we're just repeating it. The vision is for the government to engage in sustained development and community investment. I would like us to shed the image of being a high priority neighborhood in the next 5 years. So I would like to see strategy from a provincial level and from a federal level that would look at helping community to develop and to emerge along the lines that we know will change the image and the identity and the face of the community. For example, in 2005, the provincial response to the summer of violence was to create the youth outreach program. Why are we a flashpoint of crime in order to get the government to be involved in supporting us? And then if there's nothing and there's a lull, then the priority shift. They say, well, yeah, we don't have to put money in there. They're not making any noise anymore. Let's go somewhere else. So we have to challenge the government and hold them accountable. And part of the historic norms that have held Jane Finch back is that communities after communities have come into a housing situation that have never been redeveloped or reorganized since it was built. And some of you know that if you go into many of these apartments, it's interesting. When I came from Jamaica and I told people that I wanted to work in Jane and Finch, they said, why would you want to go there? And I said, but I've been through Jane and Finch and it's nice. And I remember having a conversation with Vidal Regisford, who was the youth outreach worker for TCHC at the time. And he said to me, when you start to engage people in living in these buildings, like 15 Tobermory, then you realize why this community has some issues. So I will challenge the people who are involved, including the police, to develop a strategy of advocacy that will not see us as just flashpoint for help, that we will be looked at as a community that needs support along different lines. People say York University. I went to York University for 7 years. But what percentage of students who live in Jane and Finch go to York? What are the access that are being created through the university system that will give opportunity for students? So those are questions. We know the answer to development. If you invest in community, people will grow. So that's one of the vision I have, and I hope over the next couple of years, if I'm around at JCA, I would want to see JCA be a flagship organization that really advocate but develop creative and innovative programs that will sustain development and involvement of the community.
Thank you. This will be the last one for question one, and then we can also come back.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Collins Boahan from Black Creek Community Farmers, just at 4929 Jane. To answer the first, not to answer it, but my vision in the next 5 years for this area is to see a greener and more organic Jane and Finch, where we're growing more of our foods and employing more of our people in our community. I heard, I think it was either the first gentleman there or yourself, talking about working with the youth in several programs that are not exactly public to everybody. So my question or my idea is, have you considered a paid program with the youth? Because I grew up in Toronto, I grew up in Jane and Finch. You see us out there, it's not just because we're bored, we're looking for money, right? This is Toronto. So I guess the question is it possible to create a program where it's not just a volunteer thing, but it's an actual chance to earn income and build a relationship with Toronto Police?
We've had is there a follow-up along the same line? Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Selwyn.
I'm Saleh Hanedi from City of Toronto, Social Development, Finance and Administration. I just wanted to give two comments about your, and also the mention you have mentioned. The city has been investing a lot in the different neighborhood, and 5 years ago we have come up with a plan with the investing on the focus neighborhood wherever the wherever there is a less, you know, development is happening, not taking crime as one of the, you know, indicator, but as an investment. So Jane and Finch has been identified as one of the 13 priority neighborhood, and 5 years of investment went into it. At present, we have 400 agencies, unfortunately, they are not here, are working into this beautiful community. Really, I've been working in this committee for the last 5 years when 400 agencies are working. They are very long, strong. And then based on that, I mean, like, different type of investment has been directed to it. And we did an analysis how this investment went through the consultation, like you all, went to the different groups and everything, and come up with a new strategy, Toronto 2020, looking for the vision way, what we want to be, and what lessons we have learned from those focused type of investment. And one of the thing that has come out with the province is also the mention you have mentioned about that strategy is now under the development with the province is the youth strategy. The most important thing is the youth engagement, youth investment, and finding a, you know, the jobs for the youth. So there's a lot of things is happening, and it's not happening alone. It's a partnership. It's a partnership with the police, with the partnership with the private company, private organized investment, private companies, and also with the community agency. So we are there. We are not there, as the superintendent has said, but definitely we are on the way. And this is the most important thing. Your voice is the real voice. And still that strategy is under development. If you have any thoughts and anything, get in touch with us. And we can see how we can be able to make sure that the, all your inputs are being incorporated into it. Just what I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you want to add to that? Or
we have a number of... We have a number of community organizations, businesses in this area, in this community, that have displayed an enormous amount of faith in our youngsters, which was your specific area of your question. Last summer, for example, this is not public media, so I don't care about the advertising end of it. But last summer, the Carpenters Union, in conjunction with Home Depot, teamed up with us to create a program called Build. And it was your basic program that I wish I had learned when I was a youngster, because I still can't drive a nail straight. But we had youngsters who were brought to that program, and it took some doing, because we have to overcome the, someone referred to it as hatred, and that is probably as good a word as it gets. And it may be mistrust and so on. But when we started that program in conjunction with the Carpenters Union and with Home Depot, they provided a hammer, they provided tools, they provided the wood, the equipment, and trainers to train some of our youngsters to do basic carpentry. And at the end of the session, these youngsters graduated. They were given the tools that they used. And yes, it's a small step. But it's the sort of step that leads to our next venture at our open house just a few weeks ago, where Tim Hortons, McDonald's, Inca Security, and Home Depot again were involved in job fairs for our youngsters. One of the things that we've heard very clearly from our interaction with the community is that youngsters need to be employed. We know that the devil finds work for idle hands. And this is where we are focusing a lot of our attention, is to find people who will employ these youngsters. And we are looking at, we have representatives here from different levels of government. We are looking at the subsidies that government can provide to the employers, not to the kids, not to the youngsters, but to the employers, to employ these kids. We have, as opposed to us hiring ourselves, we have two programs. We have the Youth and Policing Initiative, which is which hires youngsters in the summertime, and we have Youth and Employment Youth Initiative, which is the after schools program. So we do have programs where we hire youngsters, but let's face it, we don't have the capability to hire and provide the training, particularly skills, trades, and the types of training that a lot of our youngsters need. If you look 10, 15 years down the road, the needs for trades, plumbing, electricians, carpenters, and so on, that has already been identified as a real shortage in this country. And that is where this is where the opportunities are going to be. And that is why we are thankful for those organizations that team with us to provide that basic training, at least to create the orientation and the interest in it.
What about the youths who already got themselves into trouble and having problem getting it, if they decide to turn their life around and they go out there looking for job and they do a back check, a police check on them, and they see something on their record and said, oh, sorry, we can't hire you, because there's a negative against them. Now, this is one thing that is a big problem for these young people, because I've told a lot of them to go to Local 27. That's where I took carpentry.
Right.
And I've encouraged a lot of them to go there. But they say they're not going to do hard work like me. So some don't want to do hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what about that with when they get themselves with a police record and it's against them for life?
Well, it doesn't have to be against them for life. That's one thing. Before a youngster gets a criminal record, there are steps, there are interventions that you as adults and you as leaders in the community and us as the police and as your partners can engage in. A lot of this devil-finding work for idle hands can be stopped at the idle hands part. So, but if a youngster does get a criminal record, there are pardons. A youngster, and through community organizations, through lawyers who operate on a pro bono basis, can assist in securing pardons so that records can be expunged.
I'll pass that on to them.
I want to first of all thank you for what you're doing, Superintendent. And I want to welcome the new deputy here, and because I think we've seen phenomenal changes to the structure of policing in the last 50 years. It'll be 50 years for me next year that I've been in this country. So I've seen those changes. But to my community, I want to say that I'm happy to see that you came out tonight, because this dialogue that we must continue to have is happening. And it's not the kind of dialogue that we've had in the past. And I remember when Tony Rivera came down and was introduced to the community, and he brought a different tone in his message. And I said, this is a different kind of meeting. This is a different kind of relationship that is being set up. And I think the tradition I can see continuing, because I've gone into the police station and I've felt the difference. So that's one major change. But I think this meeting in a church premises is very symbolic, too, of the kind of relationship that is happening. But in 5 years, where are we going to be? Well, I think our community needs to know that dramatic changes are happening in the Jane and Finch anyway. And those changes are coming about because of structural developments that are happening at the university, with the Pan Am Games coming and the track and field center that's going up there. And the fact that we have subway stations all across Jane and Finch now connecting us to the York region, this is going to be a different community. And so we need to position ourselves in this community to benefit from that. We want to ensure that we know what's going on. We want to hold our police accountable. I think having this kind of dialogue is one way to do it. In 5 years, I don't want to see police in the schools. certainly not in Jane and Finch. Because if we're moving to a model where we have to have police in our schools with our children locked up in the schools and you can't get to them, that's a different kind of concept about community relations. There are many communities that don't have that. So we want to move to a situation where the mutual respect in community and the work that we do with our officers, we can empower them in ways that will allow them to be respectful to us as human beings so that we don't have to have the kind of battle that happens. And I think that we have a team that is willing to do that, and I want to support that. I want us, just before I finish, to say that I have a new initiative called the Jane Finch Economic Community Initiative that's working with the university and the schools. I've had meetings with the superintendent and our principals just recently. That's the superintendent of schools of this division. And I'm meeting with a number of people in the university to bring these projects together, working with the farm community. I just got them involved. And that's a mystery piece that you need to know about in your community. That farm sits just up here, just south of Steeles, and I guess many of you might not have been there. But it's a powerful opportunity for the community to start providing for themselves food security. The opportunity is there. So with that, I don't want to monopolize this phone. I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I want to thank you for doing what you're doing, Commander.
Thank you, Mr. Oros. Okay, just looking at the three questions that I had asked earlier, it looks like the three of them have intermingled, and a lot of them are answered. Question two was, what can you do and are currently doing to achieve this vision? I think some of that has been discussed within the conversation we're having right now. Also, question three was, what resources, support do we need to create a safe, sustainable, and vibrant community? I think some of those have also been addressed right now. If there needs to be additional information given out, if there's somebody that wants to speak to it. I know we've got Antoinette from MP, Judy Scrow's office, if you want to speak to any of the political or movement forward. We've got Vivian Brosman from our local CPLC, so I don't know if there's something that you want to address, but now or afterwards. One of the questions that I've been put forward here is, what is the one specific need that this community requires now? The one specific need we can step forward with.
I heard that.
I didn't introduce myself. Sorry. I'm Melena Williams. I work for the African Canadian Legal Clinic. Roger usually comes, but he's not here tonight. I'm here. So I didn't introduce myself before. I think that I kind of want to respond to a couple things that were said in the past few minutes. I think that I sort of want to reject the notion of it being the community's responsibility to kind of do its own PR and represent itself. Because the way that this community is painted is, in my opinion, not the community's fault. And it's not something that the community does actively. And I think the notion of good people coming out of Jane and Finch is something that I've known my whole life. I don't think that's something I need to learn. So if there's people that need to learn that, that's a problem. And I think that when it comes to policing, there needs to be a discussion of, like, I take your point about community members needing to step up and do things and start initiatives, take leadership, but there's kids going to school in Rosedale that don't have to do that. There's communities in the city that don't have to do that, that don't have to do the things that people here need to do. And I think from a policing perspective, that needs to be openly discussed, that there are people in this city that don't have to go through the things that other people do. And people that get profiled, that, and other people that don't even know what that means. So, and people, you can talk to adults who have many children, and they don't even understand what it's like to have a child who may not come home later. So I think that there's a lot of different issues going on in terms of, I don't like the fact that it's kind of like, oh, well, we're not painting a broad, that broad brush has been painted already, right? Like, it doesn't really matter what each individual police officer believes about black males, because that stereotype is there. So it's kind of like, where do we go from here, I think? That's kind of it, I guess.
Yeah, there are a lot of points that you've made, and I certainly can't speak to all of them because I'd be here the rest of the night, but there are a couple of things that I do want to touch on.
You know, there is that, the personification piece. I do agree with you. And a lot of it, unfortunately, we don't have control as it correlates with the media. And one of the things that I recognized when I was running 12th Division was that whenever there was a negative issue that was going on, the media would be there fast and furious. Every van was there with their satellite dishes. It would be put on, and that was the big thing. But whenever good things were happening, whenever the good events were happening, whenever the good folks were out enjoying smiling kids and stuff, you hardly see. You'll see one person doing it, but that would be it. And that would be through coaxing through us. So that is something, unfortunately, that we can't control, but it's something that we need to educate ourselves on. And knowing that sometimes people will put that spin on because it's beneficial towards them and not to the community. The other piece that I think that is important with that is, as police officers, with the way the command is running right now, we've picked really, really smart unit commanders. And we're doing a better job at it. You have to understand, it's always a work in progress, policing. And we are getting better at understanding the sensitivities of the community. We are getting better at understanding the sociological impact our presence has within the community because we're there. And yes, people in this neighborhood live a different experience than people in Rosedale. We are in here because there is the highest rate of crime that goes on. We have a certain number of gangs that live within the communities that are creating violent acts on a high frequency versus Rosedale. So the experience is different in both ways, and we need to figure out how we can learn. As the unit commander said, we have to learn to get our approach and work on our approach a lot better, and we have to have stronger engagement pieces. But we do have to work together. So you can say whatever you want about who's responsible for what. At the end of the day, in order to have a safe community, we have to work together. And the moment we can put down the barriers and start working on that process and focusing on that process is the day that you will find that we will be able to work faster at making a safer community, at making a closer to Rosedale, if you want to comparison.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, so would you mind using the microphone?
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I'm talking about Dwight, when you raised Dwight Drummond.
Yes.
I've known him my whole life, and I think he's fabulous, but I think that if you were born at Bamblore and you did something great with your life and you get back to your community, people aren't going to hold you up. You're just a normal human being.
Right.
So when we take, he's not the first and he's not the last, mm-hmm. and he's not the only one, and there are not only... You know, there's not these individuals that come out of Jane and Finch. There are great people in this community.
Yes, and there is no question about it. But let me give you the context within which I make that point.
Okay.
The question that was being raised was around the negativity, the stigma that is attached to the community. I make the point that, because I know Dwight personally, I make the point that that stigma is not true. That stigma is not accurate. Now, how does the community negate the negativity? In my view, you do so by producing and providing the positive. That is a positive. There are many other positives. Unfortunately, I don't know them all. So if I take one name and if I make reference to one person, I hope you understand metaphorically that I'm speaking about successes that negate the negativity.
For instance, the media. Can't you, the police force, get together with the media? Because they're one of the big problems, too, when it comes to profiling. Because, for instance, just using an instance, with the mayor's case, they had to say he was with a Somalian kid. Now, what's the point of that? Why say he's with a Somalian? If they want to say he was, they saw a video with him doing certain actions, just say that. But why have to hit the point of he's with a Somalian? If he was with a white kid, they wouldn't say he's with a white kid. And there's another instance with the shooting at Yorkdale a couple months ago when the Chinese guy got killed. It was all over the news. They're looking for 5 to 6 men. When it's a black person, or we're looking to for 5 to 6 black males, we see him running from the scene. It was never mentioned. When it came on the news, everyone was keen to the news. And from I heard it, I said, this is not a black man. Because if it was, it would be all over the station saying they're looking for 5 to 6 black men. And it took the following day for them to report they were Asian. So the media has a big part in playing this too. So is it possible that you guys could get together with the media and address these issues and tell them to stop profiling the blacks just like that, you know? Because it's not good. And that helped these young people around the area to have this negativity too when it comes to the police, the media, and everything.
Well, as you know, I'm sorry, Deputy, do you want to speak? As you know, we do not control the media, particularly in a democratic society. That is a given. But your point is very well taken, and it's an issue that has been discussed and recognized throughout the 60s, 70s, up to this point. But I will make this point. If there were an offense committed against you, and the offender was yellow, and that descriptor was necessary for us to identify that offender, would you want that information published? Regardless of what color you were. Yeah, but so often we need, more often than not, we need the public's assistance. I'll have no quarrel whatsoever with the characterization. You're absolutely, yep. In fairness to the media, it's the same media that brings a social conscience to the issue of policing and the same social issues that you're referring to. Right? Yeah. We do have a public information section that is responsible for liaising with the media. Again, we do not control the media. We should not control the media. But we do have protocols and agreements that are used to gain our respective messages and to get that message out. But you're right. I know what you're saying.
Hello, everybody. My name is Goya. I'm from Christian Center Church. I just wanted to make a comment concerning the first thing that you asked. I believe you said, what is your vision for Janie Finch? I've only been in this community for 4 years. I graduated from York University, major in international development. So I just wanted to say that my vision for Janie Finch will be to be known as a community, not as an at-risk community. And how can that happen? It's not only the police. I agree that the community has to come into play. But one thing that we forget is that individuals make up a community. We can't just only focus on Jane and Finn, because when you're doing that, you're focusing only on location and you're forgetting the people that make up that community. So what I would suggest, and personally for me, I think Jane and Finch needs, as a community, needs less programs. I understand that we want to bring more programs. And if we look at the people around here, how many people can say that they actually are residents of this community? You cannot help a region or a community without the participation of its people. So we have a lot of like agency representatives down here. We have a lot of government workers and what, but where are the people that you're trying to help, you're trying to protect? They have to be here. So we need more opportunities like this where the resident of the community that you're trying to protect or you're trying to bring programs into can have a say as to what programs work for them, because a program that works for Rexdale would not work for this community. And we don't need to make Jen and Finch like Brampton or Mississauga or whatnot. What we need to do is to work more with the individuals that are in the community. Individuals are part of family. If the family unit is broken, the individuals can make it out. So instead of focusing on just the youth program or this program, how about we begin to work on something that has to do with the family unit? Because you can take the youth out. You can have a lot of programs for the youth. You can have programs with the police. You can have after-school programs. But if you're keeping a child or a youth away from the family for like a good 8 to 10 hours, how many hours do the parents get to spend with the youth? So if the family unit is broken, if the family unit is wounded, that youth can go to any outreach program but still come back to the same messed up situation. How are they going to change? So I think that, I know you're not public admin, you're police, but if you can work something with the city, we can do more family-oriented programs where it will be the youth and the father, because we cannot deny the fact that we, Jane and Finch, lacks father figures. There are a lot of homes who don't have fathers. That is the thing. Those are the things that we need to focus on, not a lot of after-school program or volunteer work or paid work or whatnot, because the youth can get a job and still come back and still missing the fact that I have no father. So my, like I said, my vision is I want to see a Jane and Finch, a community made of individuals that are understood. You have this community made up people who came from different countries. I came from Nigeria and moved on. It's not easy to come from a different country and live in a different country. You have them missing their home or what they're used to being in a different place. So you have to understand that. And I say that to the police when you're dealing with this youth and these young fellas. There are a lot more issues they're going through than just the fact that, oh, I stole something from the mall or I'm in drugs or something. It has to go deeper than the crime. If you focus only on the crime, you're never going to get the solution. So if we can look for programs where we can work more with the individuals and the family, then you have the community involvement that needs to bring about development.
Okay, just one second. There is going to be a response to that, and I'll bring it back to you.
Again, I'm coming. You have raised a very good question, you know, but how many of you knows there's a immigration settlement program happening in the Jane and Finch? How many of you know? Newcomer settlement, which is in partnership with the province. I mean, the issues the newcomers faces, how to get them settled, how to get them referred, how to connect with them. You're correct? It's not one individual targeted. It's a holistic approach that we need to take. And that's the strategy. It's been developed 4 years again spent. The problem is sometimes I find it that the supports are there and the information is somehow is not going. Maybe we have to do a different way of, you know, getting that information out into the community. How? I think it's more reinforcing and getting that information out. There's a lot of program that is, as you mentioned, is happening, and they have developed a newcomer strategy now with the province, addressing the same things, addressing the settlement, the enrollment in the school, getting the holistic approach, getting the support to the family, to the young people, and the, starting at the young stage, not here when the youth are in the teenagers. Prevention is the most important thing. But again, I know there are a lot of agencies that are working. Unfortunately, as I said, they are not here. Otherwise, they would have spoke on that. So those things are happening. Maybe something has to come up, a communication plan about getting that information in each and every community meetings that these things are happening.
Okay, thanks. All right, thank you. Sorry, I think she wanted to answer the question first and then.
Who's here for Judy Scroll's office, because one thing we have to remember, the police have their mandate, their jurisdiction. Half of these issues that we're talking about, even though they intersect, right, we're talking about social service, we're talking about policing, we're talking about governmental agencies, we're talking about the multi-layers within government with regards to funding, the mechanism, who should be doing what. So there's a certain point here where our panel right now is almost at a point where they can't even speak. Because some of the issues that you are addressing are not within their purview. It goes elsewhere. It goes to the other level of Ontario government or federal government that needs to be addressed. Because a couple things were hit that I think you do need to do, and I would put it back to either deputy chief or our unit commander in the sense of what happened to the foot patrols that were initiated like about 3-4 years ago for 31 Division, going back into the community to try to build that face-to-face relationship. So I put that back out there to see where we're at. If we pulled it, we need to get back to it. But from the governmental perspective, we're talking about funding. Here's some key issues just brought forward in the sense that we need to restart this funding in the sense of what we're looking at. You hear that we do have access where partnerships need to be built in with the Daddy's Club, with Vidal's program, with the reintegration of fathers coming out of the jail system. Then that connection can take place with police services. But I think you more or less should start tackling that issue a little, as best you can.
Well, the one thing I will tell you is that there are some programs out there. The difficult part that we find is the same thing as that everyone else is finding here. There are programs, there is some funding out there. On the federal level, I'll be honest, there isn't a tremendous amount of funding in the sense that we don't designate the funding to the individual groups. What we will do is we will give the money to the provinces, and the provinces in turn will start filtering it down to the groups and to the cities, who in turn filter it to the groups as well. But there is one program which we do very well, and that's the Canada Summer Jobs Program. With that, you get organizations who are planning to work with the youth and who are planning on hiring youth to work with youth, like our summer camps program. You apply to that for that funding, and you will be given a certain amount of money to go towards the hiring of the staff. And it's something that we promote a great deal. Now, the one thing that we're finding frustrating is that, and I'm not trying to get into the political side of things, but the current government has cut back on a lot of funds, and we don't find out about it until we're actually talking with somebody. It comes up casually in a conversation. If there is federal funding, if there is provincial funding that's being cut to your particular program, you've got to let us know. This is a really big riding. In our office in Toronto, we have two people that are working there. We can't cut. Judy's in Ottawa most of the time. We can't cover everything, so we need to hear from you. One of the problems that we have is letting the people know that our office is here, and our office is there to help you. Please, come to our office. Come knock on our door. Give us a call. If we can't help you, we'll find somebody who will. And please, don't take that as, well, they're pushing us away. No, there are some things we don't have jurisdiction over and we don't have connections with. So we can't, like, for us to start working on some of the provincial things, on some of the municipal things, for us to start doing that, it means we're starting from scratch just as you are. But we can point you to, sorry? Okay, we do. And as a matter of fact, we're in the process right now of doing what we're referring to as the meet and greets. We're going to the different apartments. And we're just parking ourselves in the foyer and say, okay, we've come to you now, talk to us. As I said, we're limited in what we've got in the way of staff to be able to get out there. But what we want people to know is, yes, please come to us and we will help you. You don't always have to pay somebody to help you fill out your Canada pension application. You don't always have to pay to have somebody work towards getting you, say, a disability benefits in the way of the Canada pension side of things. There's a lot of companies out there right now who are charging people for that service, and then they take a percentage of any money they manage to get for you. So, which is why we're saying, please come to our office. We are having trouble getting the community to know about all the different community groups that are out there, the Big Daddies clubs, the JCA, and things like that. There's a lot of people that come to us and they say, there's no organizations around here. There's nothing here to help us. No, there's a lot out there to help. We're just trying to figure out how do we get that information out to people. If you guys have some ideas, let us know, please.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to hold on here because we are getting close to the wrapping up time, and I know there's a few more questions. Did you want to answer back to that, or? Okay, I think what we'll do, there'll be the opportunity afterwards. Because I said we're going to the wrap-up part, I'm just going to ask, with the questions you have or what you have to add, can you just keep it very brief so we can move forward so that we make sure we get the closing remarks in?
Hi, my name is Paulette Clark-Demise. I don't live in Jane and Finch area, but my church is in Jane and Finch area. And I don't even know if this is a question. It's not really a question, and it's not really a comment. But for me standing here, I just could not just sit down there and didn't say anything because I am one that have a criminal record. And the way I got that criminal record, it was an unjust. The woman strip search, food taboo. I just believe that injustice have been happening, and even there are many incidents that happened to me, and because of time, I'm just going to talk about the strip search. I'm just going to talk about found. I'm not getting in them. No, I'm not getting in them. Let me say that to get to my point, because everybody get to explain themselves. Also, I found a purse, took it to the police station, and I was locked into the police station and treated bad. And I just want to say that to the parent, there are people out there that when things like this happen to them, they're hurt, they're ashamed. The fact that you have the criminal record, it doesn't matter if it's strip search or whatever involved, that alone cost you to go into a depression. Now, there are many churches that are in the community, and the parents are into the churches. How do we outreach? How do you guys outreach to those churches to help some of these youths that are going through a situation like, I'm not talking about, say for me, I was guilty. And I had the criminal record. So I'm not taking it. I'm not using myself as an example to say that I want sympathy or, you know. But how do you work with people in this situation to gain back their trust when you yourself, the police, done them wrong? You're going to have a lot of problem building back that trust.
Thank you. I'll let, I don't know if you want to answer towards that or we're just going to move on. Did you want to answer towards
that? I would, Paulette, I'm going to give you my card. And you said you do not live in this division, but I'm going to give you my card. It has my number. I'd like you to call me so that I can speak to you personally.
Okay, unfortunately, I'm not going to take any more questions right now. What we're going to have to do is that we're going to have to, we'll have the information at the door on the way out, how to get in contact with the consultative committee. And those questions can still be forwarded and they can be answered. Either it'll be forward answered within the committee itself or within 31 Division. So those questions, I'm not saying don't ask us the questions. It's just the time limit we have right now. Those questions will have to be forwarded to Ardis. Now, one thing I've been asked is if there's two or three specific things right now within 31 Division or within this community itself that needs to be addressed right now, what are the three things that you could put forward?
So this is addressed in a specific issue that we think the division can respond to? Okay, sure. And this had to do with what I wanted to say anyway. My name is Olu Jegedi. I'm a resident in the community, and I'm also a pastor here at the church. And so I guess really to make a long story short, I moved into the community intentionally. I lived in Maple and also in South Etobicoke. But my family and I, we moved into the community because we wanted to really be able to, you know, walk more authentically with the people we minister to. And just in light of that, we have different situations that we deal with. We have youth drop-in programs. We have food bank. We have counseling for families in the community and so forth. And so we're always dealing with different things. And some of our congregants do have... a history with the police. But in light of just putting myself in their shoes, one of our congregants, it was a mom. She was at the school next door, and police happened to be there on another issue. And the mom was frustrated because her daughter had gotten into trouble, and the mom had come to the school over and over again for the same issue. So she was called again, and this issue was completely separate from what the police were resolving in the school. But because she was so loud and distraught in the school office, the police left the room they were in, and they came over, they apprehended her, escorted her into the conference room, and made her sit down. The situation about this was this person was actually an employee of the church as well as a mom and a resident. And so, you know, being authentically, geared, I said, well, let's go to the school and let's see what happened. We talked with the admin, and they themselves encouraged us to go and complain. And so here I lead up to my suggestion. So they encouraged us to go and complain to... the 31 Division, because they didn't ask for this lady to be sort of manhandled and kind of just really made to feel like she was a criminal because she was wailing in the school office. And I probably would do the same thing too. And so the issue was we went to talk to 31 Division, and trust me, I'm a peacemaker and I love all groups. And so we went there, you know, I'm dressed as nice as I am today. And we just made an official complaint. But do you know that it took 8 weeks, and we had to go through a third-party agency, and it took 8 weeks for us to get a response. By this time, the lady's not even caring about this issue. It's already over. But can you just really imagine the whole distrust, mistrust, the fear... the propagation of police kind of, apprehension in the community, because this mom, who's so well-connected, I mean, this mom caters for the school. She cooks for them. This mom is so well-connected in the community that people were thinking, and I was thinking, what if it happened to me? And even other teachers said that to me. What if it happened to me? Is it because we're black? Is it because, and so forth. So how would the police help the complaint process be more personable and get a speedy response? How could we help with that?
Something very specific? You want to answer that? Or
The question is about the complaint process. Is that correct? I believe there's some literature on the, Patricia's is nodding her head. So there is literature on the desk, on the table, about the complaints process. what I'd like to tell you, in addition to what's there, is that whenever there is an issue or a concern about the conduct of a police officer, that you should not be deterred from complaining. You should not be deterred from bringing that forward. So I'm not going to say anything further because all of the information is there. The present process is a result of many discussions of this kind. The present process that is the OIPRD, the Ontario Independent Police Complaint Directorate, OIPRD, that process came about as a result of the ongoing concern, legitimately in some cases, of the police investigating the police. The 8 weeks, I cannot speak to that. There is a time period within which complaints have to be addressed legislatively. I do not know what the specific circumstances are in that, but I do know that the process is that once the complaint is received, it's classified, and you're responded to, and you're told where the investigation is taking place, and by who, and who to contact. So I cannot address why it took 8 weeks.
Oh, okay, I'm just going to take one more, and sorry, I asked for three, but unfortunately, because we're running out of time, and there's still Margaret would like to address. Okay, it's got to be specific.
I also work with family in the community, and one complaint that I have, when there are reports like you have the anonymous tip when you call in. I get complaint, why call in? Your information on the phone, you put the people I'm on hold for so long, and it's the time that you put them on hold, what's the point of calling in to give the information when you're going to wait for 1 hour or half an hour to an hour or more just to get the police on the other line to tell you that something... They're reporting something.
Okay, that one's to address with customer service, so and to deal that more effectively. But I'm going to reiterate it again before I close off, and I'm going to ask Margaret to come up to the front here, just from the consultative committee with the some closing remarks, is that there is a Facebook site, there are websites for the committee itself that you can outreach to and put your questions forward, and they'll be answered. And if they're not answered within the committee itself, it can be redirected within the division, and we can help out that way. And if it means coming out and meeting with the divisional commanders, Superintendent McLeod or myself, we're more than, you know where 31 Division is? Come down. There's a number of people in the audience who've met with us before. We have an open door policy. Come, we'll make the arrangements, and we'll address your concerns.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out to this meeting, this discussion. The one thing about these kinds of meetings or events is that you're not giving away cars. You're not giving away money. It's not a sporting event. There's nothing very attractive or flashy or dynamic about it. But it is so essential to community building because it doesn't take a lot of energy to complain, but it takes a lot of energy to build. And it takes a lot of energy even after you've been given reasons not to trust, not to believe, to still do it. So, all your efforts are not in vain for you to come in here. It still demonstrates that people care. People don't just want to pay lip service. People are here because they care about the community, they care about the issues. They want to see people working who are supposed to be working. And they also want opportunities to work. So thank you for coming out and sharing your ideas and your concerns, contributing to the issues that are affecting this community. The Black Community Consultative Committee, Community Police Consultative Committee, started in the late 80s as a result of tensions which existed between the black communities, I'll say the diverse black communities and the police. And what we are mandated to do is to bring the concerns and ideas that exist in the communities to the police, and also be a vehicle by which the police can also communicate their concerns and their issues, but also create opportunities for dialogue, opportunities for fellowship, for partnership, so that not only can we hold each side accountable to the building of vibrant communities, but we can have that relationship. Because police don't live in Policeville. They don't live in a separate province. They live here. When you talk to a lot of these officers, it's very interesting that they're very proud of very humble beginnings. They'll tell you some of the neighborhoods that they came out of. And they talk about what motivated them to become a police officer. And you can see that the community is not perfect. The police organization is not perfect. But there is nothing that prevents us from working towards perfection. Nothing. So it is something that is very important that we invest in each other. And I just want all the members of the committee to please be on their feet. Yes, please stand. All the members of the committee. What you see in this Black Community Police Consultative Committee are individuals who have worked tirelessly on a variety of issues and programs and projects. We have a reading initiative that's been going on for years, but for the first time is going to be ongoing in an elementary school, and we're hoping to set up reading initiatives in various schools throughout Toronto. We have a great debate event that is put on where police officers and community members go to high school, particular high school, and high school students are sent from various schools around Toronto. They come to this event. They learn debating skills, how to work through very delicate issues in ways that they can express themselves. They can even in some ways rise above their emotions to articulate themselves, how to present their arguments, and also gain skills for the future. And it's been growing by leaps and bounds every year. And we're very, very proud of the gains that this committee has made. We're really, really involved with investing in our youth and showing forth the great things that are in these youth that are not highlighted in the media. There are so many things. Often it's disheartening that you have to go to specialty ethnic newspapers before you really get to see the stories of the people who are in the community building the community. And it's something that mainstream media has to catch up with. But what's very important is that we are here for the community. If there are any concerns, if you have any ideas, if you have anything to offer, and most importantly for us, if you have time, please come out to the meetings. Please come out to the meetings. We need to hear your voice. We are only as effective as you let us be. So if we are here and we don't get information, if we're here and we don't have people who are coming to the table with vibrant ideas, then we become stale. So it's really important that you don't see yourself as reacting, but really look into what you have, look into your talents, look into your skills, tap into the resources that are in the neighborhood, and come out to our meetings. We meet on the first Wednesday of every month. We break for July and August. We are shifting to different neighborhoods. We try to do initiatives in various neighborhoods. And we really want to hear from this community. We don't just want to come and drop a town hall meeting and say thank you, good night, and then we go home. We want this to be an ongoing relationship with this community. So please don't see us as being a committee that's just plopping in to put on an event and leaving, but we want to remain connected with you, okay? And any number of the people who stood up, if you know them, or even after we leave, if you want to reach out to them and give your name, talk to them about your ideas, please feel free to do so. But we want to stress that we are here for the community. We are here for the police, but we are here for the community. And we want to represent you well. We want to represent you well. So once again, thank you so much for coming out. And just keep your mind going. Keep thinking about various ways in which you can interact with us, interact with the city, interact with various levels of government, with your organizations that are already working in this neighborhood. Don't take them for granted. And don't not engage them. Make use of them. And I think together we're really going to get there. We're really going to have that kind of community without a stigma that we're talking about. Thank you.